Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. In today's episode, co-host Lynn Bairstow and Israel Munoz summarize the most recent five episodes, along with takeaways from the Bitcoin 2024 conference in Nashville. We hope you enjoy, and as a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz. Lynn Bairstow and I today have a special episode. We're doing highlights, which we've already done a couple of, and we've gotten some positive feedback. So we want to continue doing these stopping points to summarize some of the previous episodes and what we've talked about on the show. And this one will be maybe a little different since we also will be covering some highlights from the recent Bitcoin 2024 conference in Nashville, which we'll get into, lots to talk about there, and the pitch day that we covered. But Lynn, so, I mean, what do we have as far as these last five episodes?
Yeah, and again, you know, I think the purpose of those is just to make it easy for listeners to find the episodes that they're most interested in, because the only thing scarcer than Bitcoin is time. And so, you know, these just hopefully give you little snapshots of not only what the conversation is about, but Israel and I talk about it amongst ourselves all the time about commonalities that we see and trends that we're seeing from conversations. So, you know, sharing art insights as well about the overarching themes that we see in Bitcoin as an emerging technology that startups are building on and investors are investing on. So this week we have, or this time, we're highlighting the last five episodes. We have three entrepreneurs, one investor, and then we have a special episode related to the Bitcoin 2024 conference, where Israel and I were just really honored to be a part of the pitch day competition. And so this was a day that was that brought together, a tight selection of startups that were presenting their ideas to an audience that was attending Bitcoin 2024 in a very special format. And there were hundreds of applications. We got a chance to talk with all of the contestants in there among the four different categories. And so we'll be talking about that episode at the very end, and just along with our observations on Nashville. But so I guess to kick it off, Israel, what do you think? We talked about the three startups that we interviewed this last group of five, and then we go into early riders, our investor, and then we talk about Nashville. Does that sound like a good plan?
Yeah, definitely. I think that keeps the flow a little easier. So we can start with precisely those of these recent episodes, the startup side, right? So we had Roy Shainfeld on, based out of Tel Aviv, and he's building Breeze. We had Obi Nwosu on from Fedi. And we had also Julian Liniger out of Switzerland building Relay. So each of those are quite different. Let's start with Breeze. So,
you know, one thing I love that we mentioned is, like, when we were looking at it, it's like these three are not in US based or even North America based. So we're excited to be kind of spreading our wings and looking globally at what's occurring. And obviously all Bitcoin technologies are global. So Breeze and Fedi are available worldwide. Relay is available in Europe, in mainland Europe. So we'll be, but the geography, I think, is interesting because these founders are solving problems based on their life experiences from where they have lived and grown up. And so I think that kind of informs some of the things that they're building on. But yeah, Breeze, we really, got a fantastic lesson in Lightning. Breeze is basically a Lightning service provider. So they're enabling the ability for any company, any entity, any app to incorporate the ability to take to transact Lightning payments in their facility through an SDK. And so they're making it super easy, plug and play to allow payments to settle 24/7, small amounts globally, which is such an important need. I think most companies and entities and organizations don't understand the power of that. But as they do, Breeze, I think, is going to be just a leadership role of making this technology available for more people to operate on Lightning. What was your thought on that, Israel?
No, and I love the point you highlight about just the geographical dispersion, because it is exciting to see, you know, all these startups just kind of aiming at the same, you know, at the same technology and same goal generally, which is just to make this open permissionless technology work for the entire, you know, for the entire world. So I love the geographical dispersion that we covered this round. And Breeze, yeah, I mean, totally. It's a very interesting episode for anyone that's more interested on maybe the Lightning Network scaling. So, I mean, the way I kind of view it is they're providing an easy access to the plumbing behind real time payments, right? For Bitcoin, which is, I mean, it's huge. It's a huge market opportunity. Most of it is yet to be seen, but I mean, Roy is, he's, you know, I was speaking with him a little more about this in Nashville as well, and it's super interesting because you see quite a few startups now very focused on Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, right? So to me, Roy is an example of that, and you know, I hope I'm not, you know, not trying to speak for him, but I don't think he would disagree that he's very laser focused. I mean, like mission wise, what they're doing, he's very specific, you know, like store of value, all the other parts of Bitcoin. Yes, they're important. That's fine. They're there. But he truly wants to see the peer-to-peer use of Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. He wants to see that through, right? And he wants to see that become a reality. And not only want, I mean, I think there's a very, you know, there's a very real kind of purpose behind what he's doing. That's my sense. I mean, to me, he was talking to the importance of building out the peer-to-peer instant, you know, real-time settlement technology, because otherwise then we'll become dependent, you know, on these other forms of intermediation and centralization, which is a valid point, right? So, I mean, all of that to say, to me, I think the part of the fascinating, you know, side of seeing something like Breeze being built is, and it's not just them, right? There's many startups starting to work on this, is the pure, you know, peer-to-peer cash side of Bitcoin. It is being built. I mean, I don't think it's too far away where that will just be a lot more usable and accessible and understood. So
yeah, and I guess, you know, Roy put it in such a beautiful way. He just said his mission is really to enable the transfer of value the way we transfer information. And Roy, you know, started his career and an engineer in the earlier days of the internet, and just looking at how the internet changed that transfer of information, of entertainment, of news, of this and that, but it missed the value part. And so what Lightning enables and what he's building with Breeze enables that. So, and Israel, you're right. It's like when he talks about, and he painted this picture, and you and Roy got in a great discussion in the episode about, you know, the two scenarios. It could either be this open peer-to-peer software built on the Bitcoin protocol, or CBDCs, where it's still digital money, but it's operated by a centralized authority. And so the latter part of our conversation with Roy, we really get into a lot of his philosophical thinkings about, you know, just the importance of not empowering governments to take everything away from us in terms of the ability to transact as money becomes digital, and the control of that. I mean, right now, even in a cash society, you have some control if you hold cash. But as increasingly the world goes digital, you know, the tools that Roy is building with Breeze and others are building just really, it just provide that optionality that we can transact among one another without having to go through centralized authorities.
Yeah, definitely bringing to light that cash concept. I mean, we're used to thinking of cash as something that we can just kind of pass among ourselves, right, without any kind of checks and balances in between, without anyone's permission. So that concept in the digital world with Bitcoin is being built out, definitely. So that's a great episode. For anyone interested in Lightning and scaling. Then we had Obi with Fedi, which is another fascinating project, also working on scaling Bitcoin, but in a very different way. They are different solutions attacking, the same problem. In a way, also keeping it as the peer-to-peer aspect, you know, since Obi's so focused on the community aspect of his scaling solution. But yeah, Lynn, what's, you know, maybe you can explain what Fedi is as an application.
Yeah, and Hobie describes it as a super app that has this this value transfer embedded in it. But ultimately, I think his vision for Fedi is for it to be much more than just that. But in, you know, right now we operate in a world where so much of our information is in, you know, either centralized with the Google ecosystem, the Apple ecosystem, Android ecosystem, you know, Microsoft. So we have centralized storehouses, and in the a decentralized world, whether it's communication, entertainment, money holding, you know, that would be in smaller organizations that are ruled by communities. So it could be your family, it could be your school, it could be your church, it could be your synagogue, it could be your football club, it could be, you know, whatever organization, you know, it has, and you can be in multiple organizations depending on that. But it's a decentralized vision of the world. But it also, you know, I think one of the big takeaways I've seen, especially working in, you know, if you look at the evolution of fintech, fintech is trying to empower smaller transactions. But on the current banking system, it's really difficult for that to take place because there are costs involved. But with Fedi and the system he's doing, it's really meant to empower the disenfranchised or those who don't have access to bank accounts globally. And they and that particular market tends to deal in very small amounts. And so it's been unprofitable. But through Fedi, you can make dollar transactions or transfers or 50 cents or the equivalent of or whatever in the local currency. And it will cost fractions of a penny in order to make those transactions in a digital way. And so Fedi as a company will make transaction fees. The transaction fees are so small that the ultimate user won't notice them, where in a traditional financial system that we have today, the fees are just too high to make it make sense. So, you know, he's really, you know, Obi, you know, I think both Obi and Roy, you know, just those conversations were just so inspiring to me because they both obviously come from they're founding these companies from a mission-driven purpose. And so, you know, in the case of Roy, he really wants to work against decentralized governments. In the case of Fedi, you know, Obi really wants to empower individuals that haven't had access to financial empowerment before. And so, you know, that's so clear in everything he does, everything he says. And, you know, he had a super successful Bitcoin exchange in London, based out of London. And he sold that in order to pursue this, you know, vision and passion of his to really empower, you know, the world of those who have not had financial access before.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that point is worth kind of highlighting is Obi at Fedi, they're really focusing on truly kind of banking the unbanked, right? I mean, on truly serving the unbanked, let's say, because, you know, I don't know if banking is the right word, right? In the way we're used to thinking of banking, at least. But onboarding onto Bitcoin, that massive chunk of the world that is just totally ignored as far as basic financial services go today, right? So Fedi, to me, it was definitely very, you know, kind of inspiring in a way to see someone, and they're both very, by the way, very experienced entrepreneurs, right? And Obi, you can go ahead, Lynn.
One of the things that I took away from that conversation is Obi really understands like how you, and I mean, if you listen to that conversation, it's just a great kind of lesson in entrepreneurship too toward the end of the conversation. But he talks about, you know, why they opted to raise VC money, and they've raised $21.5 million. So they're one of the best funded Bitcoin focused companies in the ecosystem, and certainly one of the most talked about. But, you know, he said, yeah, we're our market is, you know, we'll have very, very tiny transaction fees, and we'll be receiving this. So we need scale. And in order to get to that scale, you need VC funding. And so it's really important from an entrepreneur, from a strategic standpoint, to know how are you going to grow your company? What is the path of growth? And some companies might have higher margins early on, so they don't need as much VC funding. Obi, in the case of Fetty, recognized that he would need that in order to reach the scale, in order to make the numbers work out. But then it becomes an enormously profitable company when you look at just the billions of people around the world who could then have access to financial tools through different Fetties.
Yeah. And a multi-purpose app, which is kind of, I think, where his vision is. But yeah, ultimately serving, you know, highly neglected from a financial side communities, and making that kind of user experience or that usability of an open network like Bitcoin a reality, right? So it's definitely a big vision that they have over there at Fetty. I know they're working hard. Like you mentioned, they're very well funded. They're well led. So it's definitely one to keep an eye on, and hopefully we'll be bringing them back at a later time.
They're just great to talk to. You know, CEOs that had founded companies before moved into Bitcoin because they just truly believe it has the power to change the world, and they have the ability to create technologies that support that. And, you know, to hear their conversations and their advice for entrepreneurs too. So, you know, the especially as we get toward the end and we're all warmed up, you know, both of them had just beautiful advice and things to share about, you know, what drives them to do this. So.
Yeah, no, definitely. So if you're interested in learning more about how Bitcoin is scaling, both of those are very well worth the listen. And then the last startup from this round that we had on was Julian Liniger from Relay. So they are the Switzerland-based investing app, which started very focused on, okay, let's make it easy for people to invest small or large amounts, but let's make it easy for people that want to, you know, maybe invest 50 to 100 euro or Swiss franc or, you know, the currencies in the European markets to basically be able to deposit some savings into, you know, the Bitcoin currency and the Bitcoin network. They created a very simple app and user interface for people to kind of do it all in one app, to invest, hold it there, use it as their wallet. Of course, they've been evolving a lot since then. So that story is definitely very interesting to hear. I think it was a fascinating conversation with Julian. He's younger, first-time entrepreneur, but he has a very good handle on what they're doing, very clear vision on where they want to go. And worth mentioning, with quite a bit of success. I mean, they're one of the maybe few startups in the space that are, you know, under 5 years old and already profitable and growing, right? So what were some of your thoughts then?
Yeah, I mean, it really is different to contrast. I was just, you know, plotting of, you know, Obi and Roy about, you know, coming from a perspective of, you know, being around for a longer period of time and then moving into it. And Julian grew up with Bitcoin and internet. And so, you know, he admits he's less of a technical founder than his co-founder, but, you know, he definitely has a strategic vision. I was just super impressed with how he looks at himself and his friends and his peers. It's definitely an app that is targeted toward a millennial user. And he is creating the tools for them to, you know, as they grow and expand their financial footprint, you know, they're evolving Relay to provide opportunities to do larger investments. I think ultimately he'll do, I don't want to say this because I don't know if it's true, but just like lending or whatever. I mean, it's just, I think that Relay will be something that follows that whole demographic as they increase in their purchasing power and their savings power. And they're going to be inheriting a lot of the wealth of the world. So I think Relay is just set up to be just an enormously successful app. And you can see with the leadership of Julian that he is super laser focused on making sure that they're a little bit a step ahead. And also, you know, the compliance issue. So as governments become a little bit more aware of what Bitcoin is, you know, they're taking additional measures in terms of regulation. And he's, where he needs to, he's adapted it. And he said it's just, you know, it works better for him. I also really appreciate the fact that he's, you know, it must be very tempting for a young founder to have conversations where you're being offered investment funds, but you need to expand into other cryptos. And he's been very focused on remaining a Bitcoin, Bitcoin only exchange. So applaud him on that. So
Yeah, definitely. I think Relay will be definitely one to watch. And I think they're going down a pretty successful path. And a lot of that is due to what you mentioned, right? They're staying true to their kind of values. They're building steadily and with success. So it's a great episode for anyone also interested in exploring how a startup is successfully providing financial services. Yes, regulatory compliance, you're still in that, already financed world, but like you said, it's providing the tools, these effective tools that Bitcoin provides as a savings technology to a whole new generation of Europeans in this case, right? So that's a fascinating episode as well.
Yeah, and I love how Julia describes it as going from being pirates to the Navy.
Yeah.
He understands that, it's like, it's kind of the path of life. You just start out in one direction and it's, his self-awareness and his vision for the company I thought was super impressive and just really inspiring again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all three of those conversations were great. They're all three great entrepreneurs. So definitely, have a listen, take your pick, depending on what topic interests you most. But they are all with their own merit, very worth the listen. I think all three of those startup conversations were fascinating. And we had on the investor side then kind of shifting to the early riders conversation. We had a new type of fund that's launching called Early Riders. They are the first to be raising funds, deploying funds, and returning funds in BTC, in Bitcoin terms, right? Which is a very out there concept, right? But it does make sense conceptually when you think through just, okay, it's sound money. So let's use sound money as our kind of hurdle rate, as they describe it, or as our opportunity cost. And they're using Bitcoin de facto as the unit of account. So I don't know, what were your thoughts from the early riders conversation, Lynn?
Yeah, I'm just fascinated by the whole concept. And I think they're the first of many. I mean, we've had these conversations where we're seeing trends in venture investors, and they call it capital deployment. I mean, I think everybody in what we would term the venture capital space operating in Bitcoin likes to segregate themselves a little bit from what venture capital has become today by using slightly different terminology. But it just makes sense. It's like, if Bitcoin is the hurdle rate, then why not, allow your investors to add their Bitcoin to your fund in order to not, sell it and then dilute it and then have it returned in Bitcoin. So you have the opportunity of earning in Bitcoin. And then from the startup standpoint, they receive Bitcoin that they can hold on their balance sheet or whatever. And early riders, is open to opportunities outside of the Bitcoin ecosystem, but those will be their first ones. And I guess I should also mention that early riders is part of the OnRamp company. And so OnRamp has a vision for providing tools for institutional investors, institutional type of investors, like from family offices or high net individuals, but including, and OnRamp is actually the first investment of early riders because their custody solutions really help solve a problem for these entities that need more than one person to, hold the keys. So if you can't, and as they mentioned in the interview, if you can't solve, proper secure custodialship where you know that your Bitcoin is safe in the future, the rest of it doesn't matter in terms of investing in Bitcoin. So I like the way they're thinking about it. It comes from very traditional, financial backgrounds. They're part of this larger ecosystem and OnRamp with, institutional clients. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how they evolve as they raise their fund and start deploying it.
And I applaud them for kind of taking that bold step. And I guess, that's why they maybe chose the name Early Riders, right? Because they explained this in the episode, they do feel that now that kind of store of value narrative is understood enough. The custody solutions are out there now to where they feel comfortable actually using Bitcoin as a unit of account, right? And investing in the broader, you know, private equity and private company space that just incorporates Bitcoin as money into, you know, their treasury, into their business model in some way. So definitely will be a great one to follow as well. That would be from the investor side. Shifting to the pitch day for Bitcoin 2024, the biggest Bitcoin conference out there. And we had an episode with Martel Fox, mostly to kind of promote and get the word out there for pitch day. But yeah, Lynn, what was pitch day?
Yeah, I think it's so important to get exposure when you're an early company. And just to kind of recap, when we started working with Martel, Martel was kind of the event chair for Pitch Day. And she is the founder and CEO of Layer 4 Talent. So she has her own company that does recruiting and talent matching for Bitcoin companies. So she's been in the space for a while and really knows, you know, individuals and talent. So she talked to us specifically about Pitch Day, and she invited Israel and I to give a workshop to the contestants about pitching. And then we did some one-on-one individual coaching with some of the teams. And so there were 12 teams in total that were presenting at the pitch day. They were among four categories. One was called Alpha, which was trading. And that's a little bit out of our realm because that's really more trading among all different types of crypto. But that was that team with $1 million prize. So that was kind of the lead of the pitch day presentations. And then the other three categories that we were most interested in following were layer two and scaling Bitcoin, open source, which I think became a real important theme of the Bitcoin conference in Nashville, and then mining. And so those three categories, you know, we had the chance to talk to all the interview all of the contestants that day and get their thoughts on what their experience was. But in some cases, the companies weren't actually raising money. They were just there to tell their story, either develop more partnerships or just create awareness, hire talent, you know, among the people that were attending. So it was just a great opportunity for visibility. And I thought the entire event was super well done. They had great judges specific for each category that, you know, could rank them based on their own knowledge and experience. Like Rockstar Dev was one of the open source judges, along with Grant Gillian of 1031, who we had the pleasure of interviewing. So they really matched the judges along with the segments. So it was a great day, I thought.
Yeah, it was definitely great. I mean, I think both you and I have had the opportunity to see, you know, the pitch day format in traditional tech and traditional venture capital. But I mean, it was great to just, at least for me, to see the first Bitcoin focused event, right, around startups pitching their ideas, what they're working on. Like you mentioned, they were, you know, previously vetted, divided into these three quite different categories of the Bitcoin technology, but you just see a lot of creativity, right, and entrepreneurship going into the scaling, the open source aspect of Bitcoin, the energy side. It was great to be able to participate. I mean, hats off to Martel, to Bitcoin Magazine, to, you know, the Bitcoin Conference for putting that on.
I just want to add one thing. I think it's especially important that they include open source. And just to that point, we didn't mention it, but both Fetty and Breeze are open source technology. And I think in traditional tech financing, you tend to think of open source as not a desirable entity to invest in. And in those episodes, they explain why it's so important to have open source in the Bitcoin ecosystem and how they approach it by just being able to become profitable companies on open source technology based on, you know, what you develop in terms of community user experience and whatnot, but inviting that open source aspect to it. So, you know, I think you and I will be talking a lot more about open source and having more open source companies on, but even walking the floor in Nashville, they have that whole area that we visited, you know, with the open source, and we saw some exciting, you know, projects going on in there. So that was one of my big takeaways from Nashville, was just, you know, seeing the creativity, the innovation, and the strength of the open source community.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, you know, maybe speaking to themes of the conference, then what were, I mean, for me, I can maybe I can start off and get your thoughts. For me, it's kind of hard to pick specific themes, right? Because Bitcoin, both the asset and the technology, I mean, the impact they're going to have are just so huge, and the themes within that are very versatile. But I would say I don't want to say I'm necessarily surprised, but I was taken aback by the size of the mining and energy participation at the conference. The technology of Bitcoin as a medium of exchange was very present, which I haven't seen as much in previous, you know, Bitcoin events, let's say. It's been more so the store of value story, and the open source aspect. So, I mean, for me, I think maybe those three themes, and the obvious one being also all the, you know, political attention and participation at the conference. But how about you, Lynn?
Yeah, I guess you can't sweep under the rug the whole political involvement there. And it's like, I mean, I think that just speaks to the fact that Bitcoin is becoming so much more mainstream, which is great. So, you know, it's entered the political discourse in the United States. And let's be clear, this is a U it was US based, but it was a global audience. And so the US politicians were very present there. Doesn't represent what's going on globally, but you know, I think U.S. leadership in that is going to be important. So that was a welcome, you know, and even though we didn't necessarily want to go there to talk to listen to politicians, it's, they were interested at that point. And but I, you know, if you go to the side stages where all the activity was, you're right, open source and the conversations in global realms, you know, just listen, there was a LATAM focused panel, there was an Africa focused panel, and just, you know, there are differences in how Bitcoin is being used. And then one of the ones that most excited me was the student panel. So just seeing the evolution, Bitcoin Magazine and the conference gave away tickets to any student who wanted to attend, which I really applaud them on. And I think Ella Hoff, I'm just going to call her out, but it's like, you know, it's there's a group of students that are really working to be ambassadors and to bring along more student involvement on certainly the university level, but globally. So I think, you know, getting that education early on about what the potential is, I think will bring more talent into the ecosystem and more awareness and more hope for a generation that really, you know, could feel a little left out of financial opportunity if you look at the amounts of debt in the world and whatnot. So, yeah.
Definitely, Lynn, to that point, I mean, to me, it's kind of jaw-dropping how, I mean, you can definitely tell the infrastructure and usability is being built. You know, it's being built out in a massive way. I mean, it's still crazy that this is, you know, in the broader scheme of things, such a small asset still, and it's growing, of course, but it's you know, maybe just a tiny fraction of the global economy and media attention and what people actually talk about. But I mean, you go to this conference and you see all, you know, all these aspects of the ecosystem just growing at an impressive pace. And you know, the entrepreneurship side, the community building side, you know, the link to Washington, D.C. as well, and you know, which is I think maybe the least interesting part, but it's also equally important. And I mean, it's just so crystal clear that it's almost like the store of, to me, it seems a bit like the store of value side. I mean, it's on the back burner a bit. Like, it is a store of value and it's an incredibly hard currency. It's still kind of, you know, hard to understand that it's only a $1 trillion asset, that being said, but to me, it kind of feels like a good chunk of the community is almost like, okay, yeah, we know that's the case, and people will learn at their own pace the store of value aspects of Bitcoin. But in the meantime, we're building this out in a massive scale, and it's fascinating to see.
Well, and talking about store of value, that's something that we didn't mention, but I think that all the swirl of conversations and, you know, RFK Jr. specifically talked about it. Senator Lummis introduced a bill about it, and Donald Trump mentioned it. But having Bitcoin as part of the Treasury Reserve of the United States government, and so, you know, as a reserve asset. And so if that occurs, certainly every other government in the world is going to want to have some Bitcoin in their treasury. And that just changes the game in terms of number one, acceptance and also value. You know, there's a limited amount of Bitcoin. And so, you know, every government, corporation, whatever. And we tend not to talk about, you know, number go up technology. This idea, that was probably the big store of value story at Bitcoin. But I agree with you, the innovation that's occurring, you know, and in the medium exchange is just super exciting to see.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, to your point, I mean, the store of value side, it definitely is there. I guess my point is, it's just, it's like, it's so in your face at this point that, you know, it's just kind of educate at your own pace, you know, and learn at your own pace. Because, I mean, you had institutions like Cantor Fitzgerald, MicroStrategy, you know, two presidential candidates talking about putting Bitcoin into reserve to as a strategy to pay off debts in the future. You had, you know, multiple senators there. You had a senator introducing a bill also to incorporate that treasury side. I mean, it's just, what else do you, you know, what else do you want as far as, you know, signal? It's very present. It's very there, right? But and you know, I guess it just, it's going to take us time, you know, maybe it surprises us sooner rather than later, who knows, but it's going to take us time maybe for it to truly, you know, reach its true store of value potential. But to me, it's just, yeah, it's just very obvious that that's there. So the more impressive part is all the everything being built behind the scenes, right? As far as the actual builders, the infrastructure, the different use cases, making sure it's reachable by everyone and anyone.
Well, and you talked about mining earlier, how they had such a big presence. And if you looked at the expo floor, it was like, I don't know, 50% was mining and certainly the biggest booths and spaces there. But you also had a trend toward decentralized mining. We saw that in the startup day, the winner, Gridley, of the mining competition, you know, is really focused on, you know, enabling more individuals to participate in mining. And you had BitAxe, which was one of the open source projects on the floor that, you know, was just talk the town, and they're individual kind of desktop miners that anybody can have. And one of our friends from Mexico brought one back. And, you know, I saw a video this morning where he had it set up. There's even my favorite thing that I saw the entire conference was a coffee cup warmer, you know, one of those little hot pads, but it's a miner. And so, you know, if I could drink my coffee all day long, which I do, and have the possibility of mining Bitcoin on it, so that would just make, I don't know, be very, very happy. So
lots of creativity, definitely. I mean, in all these different sectors, on the hardware side, on the software side, I mean, yeah, it really is hard to kind of put it into words, everything that's going on behind the scenes. But, you know, I guess that being said, who were the, because you mentioned one of them briefly, but who were the three winners of the pitch day, which we will also be featuring on the podcast?
Wrigley was the winner of the mining competition. Jolts was the layer two competition. And Stable Channels was the open source competition. So yes, to your point, part of our involvement with the pitch day was that we will be doing a special episode. We'll be featuring those three winners on our podcast and get a chance to talk to the CEOs of each of those.
I guess this ran a bit longer than our usual highlights videos, but episodes, and it's just due to the fact that there's a lot to talk about. I mean, we had some amazing startups. We had a huge conference in Nashville, and I mean, I guess I'll kind of wrap my end of the story just saying it's definitely, I mean, we've both been in this for a few years, right, Lynn, following the space, but I think it's going to start kind of exploding the amount of companies and use cases being built on this technology. So
yeah, and I guess, I mean, I should say, I was so, it warmed my heart to see the reception that we got and the Build with Bitcoin podcast got when we ran into people, many people had heard of it, or they, you know, it was great to see the reception that we're getting, that there seems to be a lot of interest in learning the stories behind the entrepreneurs and the companies that are being built on Bitcoin. And I thought it was fantastic that you and I got to have personal conversations with, with Roy, with Obi, with Brian and Brad, and with Martell. So the five episodes, we got to meet in person with four of our guests just shortly after.
That being said, I guess, you know, we'll continue covering all the building going on in the Bitcoin ecosystem.